Brother Donald, he hasn't asked for a reading, so I'll hand you over, Sheriff, to Brother Donald, who will give us the updates of the milestones.
Good evening, dear brothers and sisters. A lot's happened in the past year. My screen as well. Instead of having one picture, I've got eight. Back to one. Yes. So we're in a funny position at the moment. Brexit seems to be on a cliff edge with the new proposals that Mrs. May has put forward, which is not acceptable to those who want to leave the EU, and of course the resignation of David Davis and Boris Johnson. The news tonight is that Boris Johnson is going to wait until the autumn time before he launches a leadership bid, but one can't see that the plans that Mrs. May has put forward are going to be acceptable to the EU, and so one's going to be left in a mess. And it's going to be, I think, Brexit without any agreement. But we just have to wait and see. The angels have everything under their control. It does seem to be a very tortuous path that Britain is following. We thought, well, this is straightforward and simple. Britain leaves and ploughs her own course. And hopefully that is what is going to happen. But we shall just have to wait and see on that side. And also in Syria, there's a calmer situation, except for the Russians allowing the Syrians to take the space to the north of the Golan Heights. And the great fear is that Iran is going to move in close to Israel. So that's a bit of a tricky situation just at the moment. And we've got many talks going on at the moment, which everything's just in a state of flux. So what I thought we'd look at tonight was just a simple verse, well known to all of us, from Ezekiel chapter 38. So just turn to Ezekiel 38, and we're just going to see how this particular verse is panning out, because the situation in the Middle East between Israel and her Arab neighbours is something which is moving on apace, and we can have a bit of stability there and just see how this particular verse is coming to pass. It's well known to all of us in verse 13, having described in the previous 12 verses the actions of Gog with his nine companions coming against Israel, then presents to us that Gog doesn't have it all his way. There are those nations who are opposed to what Gog is doing, a very ineffectual opposition. But nevertheless, it indicates that in the last days, there will be a group of nations that don't approve of what Gog is doing in invading Israel. And it's only in recent years that we have seen the coming together of this situation. Of, in verse 13, of Sheba and Dedan and the merchants of Tarshish with all the young lions thereof shall say unto thee, art thou come to take his spoil. So that's what I want to hone in on this evening, and just see where Sheba and Dedan are and how it is all coming together. It's coming at an interesting time when there is a growing coming together between Israel and the Middle East, and there's a growing divergence between Europe and America. And in fact, the front cover of The Economist, the current issue of The Economist, was headed The Rift. And if you look very carefully, you'll see Trump's head, as it were. And there is a rift, and today Trump has been speaking to the NATO leaders. I haven't picked up any news yet on what has been said, but the drift was, as far as America was concerned, that unless Europe pays up more money for the cost of NATO troops in Europe, that he will withdraw those troops. And it is showing the rift that we have been expecting, between America, which we believe is part of the Young Lions of the Sheba and Dedan and the Merchants of Tarshish group, and Europe, which belongs to the Companions of Gog. So, interesting cover illustrating what is happening now. But as I say, we're going to just look at this verse and see how it all is panning out. Now, we need to know where Sheba and Dedan are, who do they represent, and as always with these things, we have to go back to Genesis. Genesis tells us of how, when the ark landed on Ararat, the three sons of Noah went their separate ways. And generally speaking, Shem moved southward and eastward. Ham moved down through Canaan and into Africa. And Japheth moved into Europe and across into Russia. So they intermingled a little bit, but generally we find Shem down there, Ham in Africa, and Japheth in Europe and Russia. So when we look at this slide, which we're not going to deal with, but this is showing Gog's nine companions, it is interesting that the vast bulk of them are descended from Japheth. Six of his seven sons and a grandson form the bulk of the people that are listed in the earlier verses of Ezekiel chapter 38. But there are two additions. Both come from Ham. Ham had four children, and Phut and Cush give us Sudan, Ethiopia, and Libya. So two of the companions come from Ham, and the other seven companions come from Japheth. But what is interesting is Javan in the middle there, the middle son of Japheth. He isn't part of this conspiracy because Japheth, his son, is Tarshish, who's one of those who's going to die in opposition. So if we just look at the equivalent, let's just knock that off at the moment, equivalent slide of those who are in opposition. So we have Japheth's son or grandson, Tarshish. Ham, who under Cush, if we just go back to that slide, gave us Sudan and Libya. But his grandson, Rama, gave us the first of the pairs, or two pairs of Sheba and Dedans, and gave us the first pair of Sheba and Dedan there. And then Shem, who doesn't appear on that previous slide, none of his sons are in the Go camp, but Shem gives us, through Eber, having Peleg and Joktan. Joktan had a Sheba. And eventually, if we follow down the Peleg line, we come to Abraham. And when Sarai died, he married and had Jokshan. And Jokshan had a Sheba and Dedan. So we've got two pairs of Sheba and Dedans and a single Sheba. Now, when we trace out the history of this, what is interesting is the number of generations from Noah. Because from Noah, the earth was empty and void, and the first generation had the whole pick of the world to go to. As generations move on, then we find that there is clash of nations and new generations come along and fight for territory. So the first Sheba and Dedan descended from Ham are four generations from Noah. The odd Sheba there, who plays an important role, six generations. And Abraham's grandchildren, they're 12 generations from Noah. So a lot of contest for lands when we get there. So the Ham's great-grandsons, Sheba and Dedan. Sheba moved down to the bottom of what we today would call Yemen. And Dedan moves across to what we know today as Bahrain. Castells in their Bible dictionary says Dedan, the place where they resided, is believed to be identical with Dedan of the Middle Ages, now called Bahrain, in the Arabia deserts. an island on the western shores of the Persian Gulf. And they seem to have moved southward too, so remained at Bahrain, but offspring moved further south. So seemed to occupy the sea area. They were traders. We know from an earlier chapter in Ezekiel, which lists out all the different traders that traded in Tyre's fairs, that the men of Dedan were thy merchants, many isles were the merchandise of thine hand. They brought thee for a present horns or tusks of ivory and ebony. So from the Gulf there, they traded with India, where we get ebony and we get elephants, ivory, and they brought it back to here, and then it was shipped across to the markets in Tyre. So that's the Hamatic, Sheba and Dedan. Now, when we move on to Joktan, six generations now from Noah, Joktan was a very powerful man. He had 13 children. He gave rise to a town called Joktan in Saudi Arabia, named after Joktan. And again, we know from Ezekiel chapter 27, verse 22, which describes the things that Sheba brought, that they were spices. And the queen of Sheba, she was descended from the Sheba here. So although the Hamatic Sheba had gone down to Yemen, when we come two generations on to Joktan, his sons seemed to be much more powerful and took over the whole area and seemed to have just absorbed the Hamatic Sheba down in the south. And two of his 13 brothers were Ophir and Havilah. So this was the general area where they lived. Now we move on another six generations from that to Abraham's grandson, Sheba. He moves down to the same area that is still the descendants of Shem, where they had established themselves. And as far as we can make out, historians, as far as they can make out, Abraham's grandson seems to have absorbed himself into these. Now, I should have said, just going back to Joktan and his sons, these regard themselves as the true Arabs. Any descendants from Ham, they regard as false Arabs, must Arabs. So these are the true Arab countries. So just going back to Abraham's grandson, as I say, he seems to have absorbed himself in with them. But his brother Dedan established himself up in the north at Al-Ula. And we know this is a case from two lines of evidence. One in excavations at this city, a graffiti was found that this chap, Ramil, son of Busprat, camped in Dedan, sitting down in the evening time, nothing to do. That's really scratched on this bit of pottery and it's been discovered. So we know that city was Dedan. But we also have from Ezekiel, an earlier chapter of Ezekiel, chapter 25, that Ezekiel paints Teman and Dedan as being very close to each other. And you can read the verse in two different ways, but neither way makes any difference. So we know that Teman is up in the north of Jordan, and so that makes sense that this Al-Ula was the northern Dedan. And they were merchants, Ezekiel 27 tells us, in precious clothes for chariots. Now the great trade between Egypt and upwards there in chariots, and they supplied whatever clothes were used for the chariots. So when we read of Sheba and Dedan, that's giving us a broad outline of this Arabian Gulf region. And it is so fascinating how in recent years, very largely, it has become friendly to Israel, which is what Ezekiel would tell us. So Rathsheba and Dedan. So the merchants of Tarshish, again at the time when Ezekiel was writing, again from chapter 27 of Ezekiel, he talks about Tarshish trading in the fairs at Tyre. And he lists the metals that they dealt in, silver, iron, tin and lead. But they were also general merchants. Tarshish was thy merchant by reason of the multitude of all kinds of riches. So a very general trader, trading all sorts of things, but there was this speciality of metals, silver, iron, tin and lead, all important. And we know where those came from in these days. Tarshish, we just remind ourselves, was Japheth's grandson. He emigrated northward, and the British Isles was known as the Tin Islands, and the Penguin Atlas of World History tells us that in the time of the Phoenicians, which is the time of Ezekiel, that tin and lead came from that region there. And we also know that Cornwall and Wales and Ireland as well, not only are sources of tin, but according to this report, tin, copper ores, lead, zinc, silver, arsenic, antimony, sulphur, iron, manganese were all mined in Britain. The date of the discovery of tin in the west of England is not known, but it was being produced about 2,500 years ago, which is very neat because that's the time of Ezekiel. So we know that in Britain, many metals, and the four metals that are mentioned in Ezekiel 27 as being traded by Tarshish, were metals which are found in England. So we have very strong clues that when it talks about Tarshish, in the latter days especially, it is pointing to Britain. Genesis 10 tells us that Javan's sons, Tarshish was one of them, of them were the isles of the nations divided. So it points to somebody that goes to islands, a mariner family, as it were. Josephus tells us that Tarshish emigrated to Western Europe. We know when Jonah wanted to flee from the presence of the Lord, he went to go to Tarshish and he went to Joppa to board a ship. So evidently Tarshish is to the west of Israel. And Ezekiel 27, source of tin, iron, lead, and a trading power. And in, if we just turn to, we keep a marker in Ezekiel, but if we just go back to Isaiah chapter 26, which is a fascinating chapter about the fate of, not 26, 23, the fate of Tyre, how that in Isaiah's day, Tyre was a very prosperous city, but Isaiah foresaw through inspiration the day would come when the power of Tyre would be broken. And he just uses a little phrase, verse 6, pass ye over to Tarshish, howl the inhabitants of the isle. Is this your joyous city, whose antiquity is of ancient days? Her own feet shall carry her afar off to sojourn. So it indicates that the spirit of Tyre was to be absorbed by Tarshish, and her own feet would carry her afar off. And of course, Britain is a long way off from the original Tyre, but is in a trading nation dealing with many, many different things, specialities in metals. And we're also told that Tarshish is associated, or the merchants of Tarshish are associated with Sheba and Dedan and young lions. And we know that Britain is the only country that fits all these clues. She is to the west of Israel. We know from history that the early Britons were descended from Javan, ancient source of these metals. She is a trading power in the spirit of Tyre, and she has this commonwealth. Young lions, independent, but are prepared to work with her when need arises. So So there is no other power on earth in the latter days when Ezekiel 38 is being fulfilled that fits Britain as the power that's being described as the merchants of Tarshish. The British tend to run Britain down, but she is a leading merchant power. She is the world's largest source of international bank lending and cross-border lending, which is so important when you're trading, because although Britain doesn't actually see these cargoes, she arranges all the insurance and the banking and the financing for world trade. And according to the Baltic Exchange website, London handles at some stage 2/3 of all the world's open market bulk cargo. So that's absolutely amazing. And Britain is the world's biggest market for international insurance. And the Maritime UK has a very interesting website, have very interesting articles on it. And this was an article last year, just showing the role that Britain is playing as far as a merchant power is concerned. And it says that ship owners need effective ship brokers, lawyers, bankers, insurers. These business services, many with a global reach, based in London and across the UK. Britain is unmatched for its expertise in shipbroking, insurance and legal and financial services. More vessels are fixed through UK-based shipbrokers, more capital provided via London banks and funds, and more vessels insured here than any other location in the world. English law is also applied to more shipping contracts than the laws of any other country, and London has the highest concentration of solicitors, barristers, arbitrators, specialising in maritime issues and dispute resolution. This range of activities means the UK can claim to be the world's maritime centre. And interestingly, just 3 weeks ago in the Telegraph, there was an editorial article about Brexit, and it was saying one of the things that Britain can do once she is free of the shackles of the EU is to set up free ports, such as occur in Hong Kong and Dubai, and have brought great wealth to those areas. And the suggestion is that if Britain is outside the EU, there will be firms that want to set up business in free port areas where they don't pay any taxes, so they can manufacture goods which can go into the EU, so there's not a double penalty, double taxation. And it could contribute 150,000 jobs and add $9 billion to the economy. But just an interesting insight that as a trading power, this is something that Britain is looking to do. So we see Britain very much is involved in this area, we're going to see in a moment in some slides. But what are the young lions? Again, it's a symbol that is well known and well used. That's a poster that goes back 100 years to World War I, of the Britain being an old lion and having young lions as the Commonwealth, or the Empire in those days, the Empire. And we have this situation that Britain, as the merchant power of Tarshish, does have associated with her. America and Canada and India and Australia and New Zealand, scattered around the world. Independent powers going their own way, but looking to Britain as the mother country. I'm sure I've read this to you in previous times, but it's such a fascinating quote. Out of the English Civil War came a race of Englishmen who lasted 300 years, who built the British Empire and saw it not crumble like the Roman and Spanish empires had done, but grow into separate nations as children do when they leave the family. And that's, you know, what Ezekiel said 2,600 years, 500 years ago. Young lions. And the Commonwealth is a very important thing as far as Britain is concerned. And just earlier in April was the meeting of the Commonwealth heads of government. They meet every 4 years. And it was just the fourth time in the Commonwealth's existence that they have met in London. Today, the Commonwealth is a modern and dynamic network of people. Half of the top 20 emerging global cities are in the Commonwealth, and the family of nations is home to one-third of the world's population. So the Commonwealth is a huge asset for Britain. And we're so thankful that the Queen, under the mercy of God and guidance of God, has kept the Commonwealth together. Without her guiding hand, it would surely have disintegrated. But no, she has kept it together, I'm sure, for this time when Britain frees herself of the shackles of Europe and has a large body of people who want to do business with her. So it represents a golden opportunity for Britain as it leaves the European Union. Now, some of you will have seen this book, but if you haven't, it's well worth it. You can download it free of charge. But Brother Matt Davis from Nottingham a couple of years ago wrote The Destiny of Britain and put forward all the evidences and much more than I've very briefly dealt with. But you go to the Christadelphian Scripture Study Service site, and just put in the search Britain and Tarshish, it brings up the cover of this book. Just click on it and then there's a download link, so you can download a PDF. So let's just see how all this is working out. And one of the great problems is the Shiva down in the south of Yemen. For years and years and years, it hasn't been friendly to Israel, hasn't been friendly to Saudi Arabia. And yet we know it must be. It's one of the key members, Sheba and Dedan. So somehow it's got to be brought within the orbit of Saudi Arabia. At the moment, the rebels, depends which side you're on, but the rebels are backed by Iran. And Iran is stirring up a lot of trouble down in the south here, as Iran wants to take and guard the waterways so that it can cause troubles when she wants to. But just very interesting, just 3 weeks ago, a new Saudi United Arab Emirates pact backed by US launches this offensive against the port town. If I just flick on to the next, the main port of Yemen is under rebel control. And what this is saying is that these two rulers, the Saudi Crown Prince, the young man that came to Britain earlier this year, and the Abu Dhabi, which is the United Arab Emirates capital, the Crown Prince there, have made this pact to take Yemen. And so between the two of them, they've launched this attack. They've managed to take the airport. But it's described as a 1,000-day war. It's been actually going on for 1,100, well, you can add another 10 days since I last gave the story, about well over 3 years. They are, at the moment, fighting has ceased as they're trying to bring about talks between the two sides. But the Iranian-backed rebels have many strongholds in this area, and it will be a very difficult job to dislodge them. But America and the UAE and Saudi Arabia are making this determined effort to pull Yemen back into the right orbit. So it's early days yet, but we can see how the angels have decided the time has now come, I'm sure, for this area to be part of an alliance which is friendly to Israel. So what we're going to do, just to divide up the time, we're going to look at Sheba and Dedan's relations with Israel, and then look at Britain's relations with Israel and the Young Lions' relations with Israel, and then look at Britain's relations with Sheba and Dedan, Young Lions' relations with Sheba and Dedan. So this was an interesting piece, 20th of June last month. Bahrain is said to be preparing to form ties, official ties, with Israel. 10 days ago, an Israeli delegation went to Bahrain and visited quite openly. The Bahrainian ruler is very friendly to Israel. He's told his people, you know, go to Israel. they are very friendly people. You'll be made most welcome. And quite a lot have gone and found that is the situation. Now, apart from Jordan and Egypt, Israel has no diplomatic relations with any of the Arab states. But Bahrain is, this is unofficial, but this official from the kingdom said that Bahrain will be the first of the Gulf states to establish diplomatic relations with Israel. Well, we'll wait and see. But it's interesting because that's the original Dedan, the Hamitic Dedan, was Bahrain. And here is the ruler saying, be friendly with Israel and allowing Israelis to go openly into Bahrain and Bahrainians to go to Israel. So it's all moving in the right direction. Now, those same two gentlemen, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, and he's only 32, and Crown Prince of Abu Dhabi is much older, 57, as well as making that pact to go and deal with Yemen, the latest news this last week is that they're working with Israel and America to overthrow Iran from within. With the sanctions that the US is threatening to put and has already put upon Iran and will only grow, the economy in Iran is very dire. The value of their currency has absolutely plummeted. Great shortage of water, and there's also dissent. And these see that, well, one of the ways of dealing with Iran is to overthrow the Ayatollahs. And so they're working behind the scenes, Israel and these two Arab nations in America, to work in within Iran to foment dissent and try and overthrow the Ayatollahs. And at the same time, deal with Iraq. Iraq's just had elections which weren't very conclusive, but the man that is emerging, the leader, is fairly friendly to Iran. So they're wanting to put influence on him. And of course, these two leaders have got lots of money, they can finance these things, to break Iran's link with Iran, Iraq's link with Iran. Because at the moment, Iran just thinks of Iraq as an extension of its country. If that can be broken, that will isolate Iran quite considerably. And also they're aiming to break the influence of Hezbollah and Iran in Syria. So interesting, just at this time, alliances working with Israel, Sheba and Dedan countries working with Israel to change the situation. The Saudi Crown Prince met with Mr. Netanyahu back in March. He was on his way to Britain, called in at Egypt, and the Israeli leaders met in Egypt. And what he was wanting to do was to normalise relationships between Israel and Saudi Arabia. Quite remarkable, you know. Go back 5 years, that would have been unbelievable. But now the situation has changed so much because they recognise Israel is their great helper in overcoming Iran. So they also, this young man has got very ambitious plans, we'll just see in a moment, to develop a big area of northern Saudi Arabia, more or less on the territory of the old Dedan, interestingly, and he needs Israel's help in doing that. So that's interesting. Netanyahu, back last month, 3 weeks ago, was in Jordan. His first meeting with the Jordanian king since 2014. There'd been a falling out last year. There was a fatal shooting at the Jordanian embassy, the Israeli embassy in Jordan, and the ties between the two were severed temporarily. But now things are back on course. And again, just this week, on the 4th of July, last week, There was news that a gas pipeline, which is coming from the eventually from the Leviathan field, the Israelis are building a pipeline up to the Jordanian border, and the Jordanians are building a pipeline into that northern part there. And the aim is to have the Leviathan gas, when it comes ashore at the end of 2019, will drive the power stations. At the moment they're running on oil, which is very expensive, very difficult for Jordan to get. So they have this deal with the owners of the Leviathan gas field to buy quite large quantities of gas for the next 15 years, I think it is. So that is in progress. These are little things. At the moment, gas from Tamar is being delivered to southern Jordan to their chemical works in the south there. That's already been running for a couple of years. What also is very interesting is to see the how Jordan is being pressurised to come and join the Shebedina nation, Saudi Arabia. Jordan's in great difficulty, largely due to all the refugees. Over a million refugees have come from Syria, and thousands more with the recent fighting want to come into Jordan. And so that's putting tremendous strain on the economy. And so she is rather bankrupt at the moment. And it's interesting that Saudi, Kuwait and the United Arab Republics have put together a package of aid, and they said to Jordan, we're going to give you 2.5 billion, spread over a few years, to help with your budget. But there are strings attached, as with all these things. But what was so interesting is that they're all to pull Jordan into the orbit of Saudi Arabia. Jordan tends to go her own way and be rather independent. But they want Jordan, well, the strings are, you've got to stop any anti-Saudi propaganda. You've got to join in with the boycott on Qatar, which is a little state down in the south, which is very friendly with Iran and is causing a lot of trouble down there. Help in the fight in Yemen, downgrade support for the Muslim Brotherhood, sever ties with Syria's Assad, and call your ties with Abbas. And as a result of that, that was on the 15th, on the 18th it was reported that Jordan told Iran that she wasn't going to renew her ambassador to Iran. So it looks as if Jordan is being pulled into this assembly of nations who are friendly to Israel. Here's another report on the yesterday. The heading was, a joint meeting of Middle East intelligence officials last week further signaled warming relations between Israel and the moderate Arab nations. So the intelligence people from Jordan, Egypt, Saudi Arabia and Israel, Mossad, all met together with the PA intelligence chief in America, and they wanted the PA intelligence chief, this Faraja, because they think that he will be a good replacement for Abbas, who is a problem on all sides. He was elected to a four-year term, and that expired about 7, 8, 9 years ago. He still clings to power without any legal basis for it, and he is preventing any movement between Israel and the Palestinians. And so, again, it was just an interesting heading, warming relations between Israel and the moderate Arab nations. And these same nations have been leaning on Abbas to move, cooperate, do something, because as far as these states are concerned, the Palestinian problem is just a nuisance to them. They recognise that it's very insignificant in the big world of the problem with Iran, and it's a barrier to their open relations with Israel. So the sooner there can be some solution to the Palestinians and the Israelis, the better, as far as I'm concerned. So looking at Israel and Britain, this now is slightly out of date because this is all about Boris Johnson in the United Nations Human Rights Council, saying to the Human Rights Council, you've got to stop this bashing of Israel. It is very anti-Israel, the United Nations Human Rights Council. And it was interesting that Boris Johnson was prepared to stand up and say to them, you've got to stop this, otherwise we're going to not support you. And in fact, the Americans have withdrawn from it. Now, of course, Johnson is no longer in power, but we shall see what happens. 3 weeks ago, Prince William was in Jordan and Israel and Jeremiah. He certainly impressed all the parties. He made very good friends with the Crown Prince of Jordan, a similar age, and they got on very well. And he made a good impression on the Israelis. And on his return, he made this pledge. He recognised that there needed to be peace in the Middle East, and he pledged to make peace in the Middle East his lifelong ambition. So Britain now begins to be more open in its relationship. This was a very historic meeting. For 70 years, the British government, the civil service, had been so biased towards the Arabs that they wouldn't allow any royal official visit. So this was a big step forward as they recognised that Britain wasn't so dependent upon the Arabs, and the Arab nations themselves, the moderate ones, were friendly with Israel. And so this was an important step forward as far as Britain and Israel was concerned. Now, Israel is a very good market. It's not a huge market for Britain, but it has a lot of important things. So this is a report end of last year. Britain exported goods and services worth $4.3 billion in 2017. Exports to Saudi Arabia are a few billion dollars higher, but Israel also has much to offer Britain that the Saudis can't. Israel exported to Britain to the tune of $5.1 billion. Israel has important technological innovations, and the two countries share important intelligence information as well. So there is this deep bond between Israel and Britain, which has been growing in the past few years. And an extract from that report, over the past few years, the close but often complicated relations between Israel and the United Kingdom have grown much closer. Among the factors contributing to the new trends, according to the experts, are Britain's planned withdrawal from the European Union, a shift in international focus in the Middle East from Israeli-Palestinian conflict to the global war on terror, and the return to power of the Conservative Party, considered friendly to Israel and the Labour Party. The United Kingdom included, and this was, it was in a separate report, but of the 10 countries that Britain is planning to sign free trade agreements with upon Brexit, Little Israel was one of the 10. And Israel is one of the 10 countries which it seeks to sign new bilateral free trade agreements. A joint working group has already been established towards that end. Britain must take a strategic view of the region ahead of Brexit, and Israel has been tagged as one of the preferred countries in the first place. Despite Israel's small economic size in global terms, they also looked at the contribution towards the European Research and Development Programme and the fields of innovation, one official said. So Israel is important to Britain because she is so very innovative. And just last month came out this impact report on the UK-Israel Hub. That was an organisation which was set up in end of 2011 to bring together Israeli companies and British companies. Israelis are very good at developing ideas, the British are very good at taking ideas and making them marketable and marketing them around the world. So in the past, many Israeli companies went to Silicon Valley, California to do their business. They've now woken up to the fact it's much easier to deal with Britain, which is only 2-hour time zone difference instead of 10-hour time zone. And Britain has worked very hard by setting up this technical hub in Tel Aviv to bring together the two sides. And it has led to 175 partnerships between Britain and Israel, and has brought a lot of business. So what are the young lions? Well, United States, Canada, India, Australia, New Zealand, they all have strong links to Israel. And foremost of the young lions, of course, is America. And back in December, it was Trump who set the ball rolling about increasing friendship with Israel by saying that he was going to, at long last, move the embassy to Israel, to Jerusalem. It was about 20 years ago that the, I've forgotten which president it was at the time, said that they were going to move the embassy, but every 6 months they put it off. And Trump took the bull by the horns and says, we're going to do. And in celebration of the 70th anniversary of the State of Israel, the 14th of May, his daughter opened the embassy in Jerusalem. And the Prime Minister and many other officials attended and said that, Mr. Trump, by recognising history, you have made history. You can only build peace on truth, and the truth is that Jerusalem has always been and will always be the capital of the Jewish people, of the Jewish state. Now, a lot has flowed on from that 14th of May meeting, and now Trump is considering upgrading Israel's military status. This is Debka a month ago. NATO has many members around the world, but there are also many countries that work with NATO to help them. But the problem is being able to have common communications and common linkages so that these countries which aren't in NATO can work with NATO forces. And back in 2014, you might remember there was a big meeting of NATO in Wales, and five countries, Australia, Finland, Georgia, Jordan and Sweden, were upgraded to become major non-NATO allies. They became members of the Partnership for Interoperability. Have a job to say that word. Initiative. In other words, so that they are operating on the same wavelength. And what Trump is considering is bringing Israel into that group of five. And he's pledged that the US fleet will establish a permanent base in Haifa and Ashdod. They do temporary visits, come and go, but he's going to place ships permanently there, as base there. And then also he's going to top up what the United States has a base in the Negev down in the south. But he's going to upgrade the equipment that is there, pre-positioning is what they call it. And it says there, all in all, the Trump administration is providing Israel and its armed forces with the military resources for preparing for war of a quality and quantity far in excess of those possessed by NATO members themselves. So it is looking to Israel as being a key pin in US military strategy in the Middle East. And of course, if Trump does carry out his threat to withdraw troops from Europe, then the Middle East will be a very important sector for them. Now, Israel has reacted to this, and this is on Friday in latest EPCA. This Major General Allon, who was just about to retire, he's the head of the IDF's operations. He's been brought in to head what they call the Iran project. And it's a project which involves not only Israel, but other nations, Saudi Arabia, UAE and US. They're preparing for dealing with Iran by war. And so Israel will play a key role in that. And she's been very successful in taking out bases, Iranian bases in Syria. And if needs must, then she will be used to take out nuclear research places in Iran. So under American control, they've set up this Iran project, and this Major General has been put in charge, and so he's been tasked with the execution of the decisions to attack Iran's nuclear facilities, ballistic missiles and military bases in the Middle East. And Iran's push into the Syrian Golan border has heightened Israel's fears of a fully fledged war with Iran. So Iran might fall through internal dissent, or Israel and her friends might have to go in and deal with it. But again, it's interesting that that similar plan for Israel, Saudi Arabia is setting up the same kind of thing, United Arab Emirates is setting up the same thing, all to be coordinated by America. Another of the young lions is India, and the relationship between India and Israel only goes back 25 years, because India is a Hindu country and totally different to Israel, but the two countries have seen the value of working together. And last year, Modi, the Indian Prime Minister, visited Israel. This year, Netanyahu visited India. Very successful, and a lot of trade deals were done. There's an awful lot of business which the two countries can do. So what of Britain and the Shiba Dedan countries? Well, the foremost one is Saudi Arabia. This is the Crown Prince Salman, who came to Britain and visited the Queen early in March. He has this ambitious vision of building this huge area, which will involve British help, as well as Israel and Jordan and Egypt. So he has come to Britain because he sees Britain as a trading power and wants to increase business with Britain. And it is one of Britain's best markets, is Saudi Arabia. 30,000 Brits live in Saudi Arabia. So they did deals when they were over. But what he's proposing to build, I'm afraid that map is so faded you can't see the outline there, but taking this one here to the very extreme north of Saudi Arabia, or northeast, northwest, that coloured area is where he's planning to build this new mega city with a $50 million price tag. But he's put it there because it's on Saudi territory, as I say, it's in the area of the ancient Dedan. It's close to Egypt, it's close to Jordan, it's close to Israel, and he needs the help of all of those to develop this free trade area. He wants to move away from dependence on oil, gas, and become a trading nation. So it's so interesting that is what he is, that is his ambition. Whether it will ever take off, we don't know, but if it does, then Britain and Israel will stand to benefit greatly from it. As I said, Prince William and Crown Prince Abdullah, they got on extremely well. There are strong links between the two countries, Britain and Jordan. So Bahrain and Britain, so Bahrain is the little island over there. Britain earlier this year opened a new base paid for by the Bahrainian monarch. He is so afraid of Iran, which is just across the waterway, that he is willing to pay a lot of money to have this base built so that the British ships can permanently be here to help defend his kingdom. So the merchants of Tarshish very much involved with this Dedan, the Hamatic Dedan. So £40 million base paid for by the government. So permanent base for Britain, and her new concept is east of Suez. Britain has got troops in Europe, in Germany especially, which she is planning to withdraw, especially as she leaves the EU. And one of the regions which she feels that the troops ought to be is in the Middle East, because Britain sees this as a most important region to her desire to be a trading power, trading around the world. And so bases in Doha and Oman and in Saudi Arabia are what Britain is planning to do to increase her military presence in this area, so she can defend the waterways around so that trade can go through the Suez Canal. So wonderfully we see the coming together of merchants of Tarshish and the young lions into this region, Britain, United States especially, all friendly with Israel, all involved in the region, and this region being friendly to Israel. As I say, a few years ago it would have been an impossible dream. We've been privileged to see it as a reality. So that's the end of the talk. So there are so many things, brothers and sisters, taking place almost behind the scenes, quietly, all moving in the right direction. Great encouragement to us that as we approach the coming of the Master, that day must be so close. We know there's still things to happen. Yemen has got to come under Saudi control, Britain's got to come out, but the Lord Jesus will come back before all those things have taken place. We don't have to wait till all that happens. The Lord Jesus comes back and there's an interval of time before Gog comes down against the land. And so, brothers and sisters, we're right on the edge. So let us take encouragement and press on, because few are the days that remain.